It's time for our final hour here on Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, along with Derek Mason today. Derek Mason's former head coach at Michigan State, Nick Saban. He was at the podium today representing, of course, the Crimson Tide. Always like to hear what's on his mind. We had a great discussion earlier in the show on NIL with some of the things that Lane Kiffin had to say about it. Let's hear Nick Saban's opening statement today, and then we will process, as they say, our SEC media coverage brought to you by Volunteer Hose and Gasket, equipment supplier in Nashville, including gaskets, hoses, and hose fittings, along with seals, packing, joints, gauges, fire protection, cups, belting, and more. If you need it, they've got it at Volunteer Hose and Gasket. Later today, you've got Michelle Knezovic and Caroline Fenton. They are at SEC Media Days. They've got some great interviews. Vanderbilt was making the rounds today. They've got great one-on-ones with Clark Lee and quarterback Mike Wright. So be listening for those this afternoon, along with all of their coverage right from Radio Row. Here is Nick Saban.
The kickoff of another, you know, football season. You know, lots of people love vacation, but I'm the leader of an organization, but I'm not the leader when I'm on vacation. So when I get the list to take the garbage out, you know, run the sweeper, pledge the refrigerator, it's always, after a certain period of time, refreshing to be able to go back to work so that I can be the leader of an organization. So this is my 21st season in the SEC. A lot of great memories, a lot of relationships that have been built, and memories that are going to be cherished for a long, long time. You know, even though you have great family time and look forward, coming off vacation, you have great family time, you always look forward to preparing for the challenges of another season. We've had a really good offseason with our team. We had a good summer with our players. I think our team has made improvements and progress in, you know, a lot of areas, whether it's physical development, attitude development, and, you know, trying to develop a mindset that will allow us to have good team chemistry, you know, in the future. But, you know, as we always do, it's kind of like here we go again in making predictions about how young people, adolescents, will perform in the future. And, you know, so that's why we play the games. That's why we have a season, so that we can sort of see how we grow and develop and, you know, how the team develops, sort of all the things you need to develop on a team, the togetherness, the positive energy and attitude, the you know, people being responsible for their own self-determination, the work, preparation, ability to overcome adversity, pride and performance that, you know, make the team, allows the team to be able to play with the consistency you need to be successful for an entire season, especially in the SEC, which is a very challenging league. But I think it's also more difficult than ever to sort of predict, you know, how your team is going to develop in all these areas, because we have more turnover, you know, on rosters in terms of how do you create a sense of object constancy, you know, which we all strive for in our life, sense of belonging, sense of family, sense of consistency in what's coming next and, you know, what the challenges are, you know, who I am, where I'm going, how I'm going to get there. And these things are all really critical factors in developing, creating an identity personally, individually for players, as well as, you know, for a team. And I think the more turnover you have, you know, on your roster, probably the harder it is to predict, you know, how those things actually happen. I think it's, you know, also probably because of a lot of the changes that we have in college football as we move forward. It's also very, very important to stay focused on, you know, what do you need to do to have a program that creates value for players and their future in terms of their personal development, their academic development, ability to develop a career off the field, which really prepares them for their future after football, and how that can they develop a career, you know, as a football player. So all these things contribute to how players can be more successful in life. And I still think, you know, the focus needs to be on how do we continue to be able to have the kind of program that's going to help players develop, you know, value for their future, which is why we all went to college, all of us, me included, all of you. And that's with the changes. We want to make sure that we sort of stay focused on the things that are most important for college student athletes. You know, the players that we have here, you know, Bryce, Will, Jordan Battle, have all represented our program in a first-class way. I think they've represented the university in a first-class way and the conference. You know, all these guys are on track to graduate in December, which we're very proud of the academic standard that we've been able to maintain in terms of graduation rate. I think we're in the top three in the country in APR. These guys have provided good leadership, you know, for our team. They've worked hard. They're the right kind of people. They've got the right stuff. They also have, they're very talented players. But the challenge is, you know, are the players on our team all going to buy into the principles and values and the standards of the organization, which these guys have done a great job of demonstrating, so that we can create the kind of identity that will create the kind of consistency and performance that we need to have a successful team. So mindset is really, really important to that. Leadership, which these guys have done a great job of providing, is also very important to that. But it's also, you know, how do the other people on the team sort of buy into the leadership that have been provided? And, you know, that's always a work in progress with new players in the organization, new players on the team. So we have challenges on our team. I mean, we had seven players drafted, you know, two first-round draft picks and some very, very good players at wide receiver and other positions that, you know, will be difficult to replace. I think we've had 113 players drafted in the last 14 years and 41 first-round draft picks, so very proud of the fact that we've done a good job of creating value for players at the next level. But it'll be a challenge for us to replace the skilled players lost, two great receivers on our team last year. We've got some significant challenges in replacing, you know, some offensive line people, which, you know, Bryce Young is a great player, he's a great leader, he's a great quarterback, obviously. But quarterback is also a position that may be one of the most difficult positions in all of sports to play if you're not surrounded by good people. So the challenge for us is to make sure that we do an outstanding job of developing the players around him so that we can continue to be a very productive offensive team. You know, defensively, I think we've got seven starters back. But again, the biggest challenge is going to be, you know, how do we replace the corners that we lost? Because, you know, corner is probably the one position that puts the greatest restrictions on what you can do on defense. So that's going to be a significant challenge for us as well. I do think we have good specialists, so we should be good at special teams. I'm really pleased with the new special teams coordinator, Coleman Hutzler, that we have. He's done a good job. The players have bought into it, which is always important on special teams. And from a staff standpoint, you know, this is the first year in a long time we've had both coordinators, continuity in both coordinators, which I think is, you know, probably a you know, important thing for us. And the new coaches that we have brought in to replace coaches on our staff have, you know, fit in extremely well. They made a positive contribution in the relationships they've been able to develop with players and the energy and enthusiasm and new ideas that they've brought to the organization. So we're very, very pleased with the, you know, staff that we have right now in terms of how they can contribute to developing, you know, our team. You know, I'd like to thank you all for all that you do to create interest, you know, in college football. There's a lot of positive self-gratification that players gain from the things that you do, which I think, you know, college football is a great game, tremendous interest on a national level.
So his yearly thanking of the media at the end of the opening statement there, Nick Saban. Okay, so let's pause there. When we come back, I want to hit on a couple of points that he made, and then we'll we didn't unfortunately catch the part where he was asked, because every coach is getting asked about it, the NIL. But we will work in some comments that Kirby Smart said at a different venue. He hasn't gone to the podium yet in Atlanta. That's going to be coming up later in SEC Media Days. But he made a couple of really interesting statements to a group of Texas high school football coaches that sort of fall in line with our discussion from earlier today. So that was Nick Saban. You heard Derek Mason. We're going to come back with a discussion from SEC Media Days right after this. And it's going to have to do with something that Nick Saban said about the big picture as well as the immediacy of things like NIL. Stay tuned. We're coming back. You're listening to Darren Donick and Chase along with D. Mace today, live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio. Willie Donick, Derek Mason here with you. All right, D. Mace, here's what I got for you.
Mm-hmm.
I admire that Nick Saban still tries to emphasize when he's talking to the media about looking at the big picture. It sounds hokey to some, especially in this atmosphere where all we're talking about is this new system where the players now can make some money, right? The NIL has opened up a whole new world. But still, you hear Nick Saban try to say, look, this is about the future. When you go to college, you go to college to help yourself get set up to be a successful person later in life. That absolutely should be the goal, but it gets met with so much, yeah, whatever. Come on, these kids, they're commodities. They deserve to get paid. Can't you do both? Like, I really do admire, and I don't know what it's like every day to play for him. I mean, you do.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure he's evolved a lot from his days as a younger coach. But I do always admire the coaches that they're there to win. They want to make you successful in that moment, that day, but also are trying to set you up so that when you leave there, you know, you're on a pathway to success. Did you get that? Do you feel that experience playing for him? I know that I appreciated my college coach because I thought he was absolutely doing that. He was trying to do both. Be successful in the moment while you're there, but also help you be successful down the road.
I think he was, but it's tough for a incoming coach to sort of find his way, you know, around or through or with guys he didn't recruit. Guys at the time, I had been there 2 years already, so. Him trying to figure personalities out was a little bit different because he didn't sit in my living room. He didn't recruit me, so it was a little bit different. He didn't recruit a lot of other guys at that particular time when he came in. But you knew, you know, every day that he wanted the best out of you. And if he felt he couldn't get it, then he was going to get it from someone else. You know, but he always stressed, you know, team, you know, being on time, being where you're supposed to be when you're supposed to be there. All those things, those foundational things that he preached then, he's still preaching now, from my understanding. That's why the program is the way it is. And he tries to truly hold on. He knows the landscape has changed. He knows that it's no longer 1995 when he got to Michigan State. He knows it's not that anymore. He knows the landscape of college sports has changed. The way you coach individuals have changed. The way you interact with these young men have changed. He understands that. And I think at first he can't afford it, but now he understands it and he's benefiting from it. But even understanding and benefiting from it, he still holds on to those true, his true core values is getting individuals to his program. Well, he don't call it a program anymore because it's an organization. And now you see how they've switched from program to organization. Now, typically when you talk organization, you're talking about the NFL. When guys say, but the organization, they're talking about professional sports. And 10 years ago, it was programs. Now they're organizations because that's what they truly are. So he's found a way to sort of switch it, but still hold on to those true core values of bringing a kid into the organization, making sure he get the most out of this opportunity on the field and off the field. I truly believe he believes that, and he holds on to that, that he wants to see these young men, you know, do well in life, even if it's not football. I know two or three guys that, you know, that he recruited at Michigan State that he has helped outside of football. You know, he has, which me outside of playing football. Now he's helped them in the coaching world. You know, he's allowed them to, he's brought them onto their staff, allowed them to do things or helped them out. And that's not even, we're not talking about on the field stuff, guys that are playing. You know, when he recruits you, in his mind, he feels that any opportunity I can to help you, I will do that. You know?
Yeah.
So he's holding on to these true values, these core values of his. He truly believes this.
I've said this for years, that what I really admire about my college coach at Vanderbilt, Eddie Folger, basketball, is at any stage of life, right after you graduate, you know, summer between your freshman and sophomore year, 10 years after you graduate, if you needed his help for networking or advice or something, hey, you know, could you help me out with this? Or could you put me in touch with this? He was readily available. Like, the relationship doesn't end or didn't end for any of his former players after they were gone. So he's always kind of looking out for you, and hopefully he set you on a path. I feel like Nick Saban values that. I think the best coaches do, where now, of course, you've got to win enough to keep your job, right? If you don't win, you're going to be out. So you have to play by the rules. You have to do what you can. But the other thing I loved that we heard from Nick Saban, he's talking about that constancy is the word he said. The family atmosphere, the environment that you're creating in a locker room. Derek, you know it's a special feeling when, especially on a football team, when you got 85, 100 guys, right? Mm-hmm. Basketball is a smaller group, baseball a little bit bigger. But when everybody's in the room and you're on the same page and you're trying to achieve the goal, that's a good feeling. Like, any coach, you want that. And the turnover on rosters, the ability to transfer, you look the other way, a guy's not happy, he's out. NIL, everybody's getting different amounts. Everybody wants a slice of the pie. That threatens the ability to create that environment in a locker room, right? There's always been challenges to getting that. Now, these are huge challenges now. This is way different. And so I can tell he's trying to figure out how to navigate that. And they're one of the haves. They have the ability to deal with that. But I'm curious your thoughts there. Like, Kirby Smart went off, as I said before the break, and was talking about NIL and how topsy-turvy it's become in such a short period of time. He said, okay, a young man getting $10,000 a month for 4 years or 3 years of college, that's $120,000 per year. What do you think he's going to do with that? He's in college. Is that actually going to make him more successful later in life? Because I promise you, if you'd handed me $10,000 a month my freshman year of college, I probably wouldn't be where I am today. I believe that. But the other thing that he really gets bothered by, I can tell, and all coaches are screaming right now for some help on this. Lane Kiffin, in his own way, calling for a salary cap. They want to preserve that environment in the locker room that you're trying to create. Agree? I know you can be skeptical about it and say, "How you get paid a lot of money to do this and figure it out. The kids deserve this, all of this." But I still think there's something to be said for the structure, the environment, the learning curve that you take with you when you leave the program that you can use successfully.
Well, no matter what, no matter what, whether you're, you know, 5 or 15 or 18 or 8 or 18, let's say that, you want structure. You want to be able to walk into a situation where there are guidelines and structure and whatnot. Kids want that. They thrive for it. They thirst for that structure. It may not seem like it at times, but they need it and they want it. And Coach Saban gives them structure. And the word that I go to when I'm listening to Nick Saban is, how do I keep the kids engaged? How do you keep these kids engaged? It's not. It's just like trying to keep a 5-year-old engaged. How do I keep the attention of a 5-year-old? That's damn hard to do, to keep the attention of a 5-year-old.
Yeah, especially if those kids are engaged in trying to figure out, hey, can I get 10,000?
Exactly.
Can I get 15,000? How do you stay focused at all on the big picture if you're just chasing that while you're there and not trying to look ahead and saying, okay, am I on a pathway to something here? And that money's going to run out.
Yeah, and that's what he's alluded to, and he's used other words. But if you listen to him, he's still trying to figure out, especially now more than ever, with the transfer portal, more importantly than the NIL, because they can do things to get guys money. That's not a problem. But when you recruit, you know, all these 4- and 5-star guys, even 3-star guys, how do I keep them engaged enough in what we're doing to keep them at the program and not transfer? And engagement mean, how do I get these young men to understand, you will play. If you show you can play, you will play. So do the things that are necessary. You know, buy into what we're preaching. Do all the hard work. And if you have that potential, you will play at this university. You may not play all 4 years. You may be here 4 years and only play 2 years. But you will play. And he has the track record that shows it. Not many coaches have that. Nick Saban has that track record of, hey, listen, you may not step on the field for 2 years, but that third year, you might step on the field and win a Heisman Trophy. Or you might end up being the best receiver in college football, and then you get drafted, you know, in the first round. He has all of these examples he can point to. So,
yes. And the other thing that you have to fall back on, I think, if you're doing it right, is to, for those kids that if it doesn't work out, if you end up being second string or third string, if you stick it out, I'm still going to give you the tools to be successful in life.
Exactly.
You're
going to
take a lot of your experience here. Even if you didn't get the accolades, even if you didn't get paid as an NIL, you didn't play as much as you wanted to, you're still going to have value there if you stick it out. If you want to leave, okay. But just know that the grass isn't always greener on the other side. You know, it might be, it might not be, but I want you to know that if you stick it out, there will be some light at the end of the tunnel for you, even if it doesn't work out playing time wise.
But
that's what you have to try to sell.
I think he's understood, and what I think hopefully a lot of coaches are starting to understand as well too. Before we go to break, is that it's only a small percentage of guys that are transferring. Only a small, but we talk as if guys are transferring just like willy-nilly, just like every minute someone's transferring. Like you got 20 guys.
It is an increase.
But I'm saying it's still just a small, on each roster, at each university with their organization, not program, you only have a small amount of guys that transfer. Your core guys, whether they are, you know, freshmen, sophomore, or juniors, you only have a small group of guys that are transferring. So it hadn't got to a point where, you know, 30% of your roster is transferring if they're not playing. That's not happening. It's a small group of guys that are transferring. And he understands this, and I think a lot of other guys are starting to pick up on that. You can't keep everybody. Some people are going to want to transfer just because.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
No question. But you admire the guys who stick it out. I'll give you an example quickly from Vanderbilt baseball. Spencer Jones probably could have transferred, stuck it out. Now he's a first-round pick. You heard immediately Tim Corbin in every interview saying, I admired his ability to stick it out through the tough times, the hard times when he wasn't playing. Easily could have gone in another direction, stuck it out, and he's now benefiting from that. When we come back, we'll talk more. Our coverage from SEC Media Days continues, and we'll hear from the crazy pirate, Mike Leach. Stay tuned. This is 102.5 The Game. Coming down the home stretch here on 102.5 The Game, Darren Donick and Chase. Lee Donick and Derek Mason here with you today. Max Hurst behind the glass, and of course, coming up a little bit later, you have got Caroline Fenton and Michelle Knezovic from SEC Media Days that are going on here in Atlanta. So, you're listening to our show live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio. Let's hear from Mike Leach, head coach of Mississippi State. Always entertaining. Came in guns a-blazing as always. Here's what he had to say.
All right. Well, I appreciate that. Any questions?
All right. If you have questions, raise your hand. We'll get started right away. Aaliyah, Bailey, and Kiera will get to you. We're going to go right over here on our left, third row. Coach, right over here to our left. Should be good. Go ahead and try it again.
All right. You can yell, maybe. I don't know.
Let's try to get – do we have another microphone? Can we go ahead and get the sound in the back up, please? All right, we need the question mics up, please. Let's try it again over here on the left.
How you doing, Coach Lee? Scotty from Off Script. I asked Coach Lane about the personalities in Mississippi. He corrected me and said there were three, including yourself. What possibilities you, Lane Kiffin, have in playing Jackson State, being in-state competition for each other? Is there a possibility that you'll ever see or your team will play at HBCU as Jackson State?
You know, I'm not sure. I mean, it's possible. I think it's possible. We don't have anything scheduled that I'm aware of. Of course, on my staff, Tony Hughes used to coach at Jackson State, and I know a bunch of those guys on the staff, and that, you know, they do a really good job. And then Coach Sanders is a blast if you know him. I mean, you know, just talking to him is fun. And then I mean, I wouldn't rule it out, but we don't have anything scheduled.
Okay, we're going to go right here on this near aisle. Drew?
Drew DeArmond, WZZN Radio, Huntsville, Alabama. Coach, I wanted to ask you about your offense. It's, of course, the air raid. You've been known for production since your days at Texas Tech. You took a jump in productivity in year two. What's the area you think that needs to be improved the most, and what do you like about your offense heading into year three?
Well, we've got some starts. We're still, I guess, on paper kind of a medium young team, but we do have a lot of starts, and I think that's helpful. So we do have experience to draw on. I think we need to sharpen up at receivers. I think we need to kind of polish up our receiver play. I mean, we have good guys that work hard and, you know, I have a sense of urgency, that type of thing. But we, you know, I just think we need to be sharper. We have a mixture of really young and old there. And so, and I do think we're getting better. And I thought we had a good spring. But I think we can sharpen up there.
Coach, we'll go over to our right about halfway back.
Connor O'Gara, Saturday Down South. Sankey said that you have some Netflix recommendations. Would you be willing to share those with us?
Yeah, you know, I wish I'd watched more Netflix lately, and I haven't. Somebody said I need to watch The Terminal List, which I haven't watched it yet. You know, I guess The Hidden Gem, which I think I said it last year, Operation Odessa, that documentary, you need to watch that, about these international criminals that try to buy a submarine for Pablo Escobar. That's worth watching. I wish I could tell you I'd watch more Netflix. I haven't watched a lot lately. And during the season, it's good to watch, you know, to kind of get your head straight. But I did, I'm up to date on Better Call Saul. I'm up to date on Yellowstone. I'll tell you, that's part of it. The kids got me into Stranger Things, and I'm certainly not ready for this season. I'm about halfway through. I don't know. So if you guys have any good recommendations, I could probably use them. I guess I'll defer to the numbers here.
All right, Coach, we'll go right in front of me, about three rows back. Kirk?
Kirk Bowles from the Austin American Statesman.
Oh, good to see you again.
Good to see you, Mike. Severance is pretty good. I'm not sure if that's Netflix or not.
What is it?
Severance, about mind control.
Oh, yeah.
So I might check it out.
Well, don't try any funny stuff.
Okay, all right. I couldn't get to you. I know you miss Texas and Oklahoma desperately. I was curious of your reaction when you found they were going to be joining the conference, and how long do you think it'd take them to get acclimated for this league?
Well, I think they're kind of already acclimated from the standpoint, you know, good teams play as hard as they can and try to improve their skills along the way. And so I think they're certainly ready to do that. I think the competition level raised. From my standpoint, and I get asked that, especially from the Texas and the Oklahoma people, from their standpoint, I think it's going to change things quite dramatically. From our standpoint, you guys have us as having the toughest schedule in the country. So that being the case, we can't play everybody. So knock two of those guys off and add OU and Texas, and I probably gained about half a step, I would think. The two most eastern teams in the West are the two Alabama schools, so send them east, and we have to play Texas and OU, and I probably gained a little on that.
Coach, we'll go over to our right side along the far aisle.
Brent Zorneman, Houston Chronicle. Coach, whose side are you on in Jimbo versus Nick?
I think they both kind of illustrate the frustration of how things are, you know, right now, and it's not sustainable, so something's going to change. You know, right now, we haven't defined what exactly is an amateur or a student athlete as opposed to a professional, and I think we need to do that. And I think there is ways to do it. I think that, you know, some football players may be in their best interest to remain a student athlete and, under that model as opposed to professional and vice versa. And I think that's got to be defined. Currently, college athletes have more privileges than anybody at any other professional level. And whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, I don't think it stays the same because there's responsibilities that go along with being a professional. And I've said this before. You've probably already written it down. But those guys lock themselves in rooms and watch film all the time, so you'll be able to get away with it. go up to your next favorite NFL guy and say, hey, I heard in the NFL they're going to have unmitigated free agency, 365, 24/7. And by the way, there's not going to be any salary cap or draft. You're just going to have bidding wars. And just watch the expression on their face. And don't look at anything else or write down any notes because the expression on their face will be well worth it. And so I don't see this as I don't think the dust has settled. We're in a big transition period on a number of things in college football, and we got, sharp guys actively trying to sort it out, and I hope that it will be. And But, yeah.
So that's Mike Leach from Mississippi State. Great last answer, mm-hmm. going right along the lines of the theme that Derek and I have been talking about throughout the day. Great analogy, again, to the NFL in a what-if question. We're going to process that on the other side in our final segment. Stay tuned. You're listening to 102.5 The Game, 106.3, and the Game Nashville app. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, and Sam Cook, along with the Delta House from Faber College, if you're an Animal House fan. Great song. Interesting stuff. You listen to a conversation with Mike Leach, and you are going to come away with some things to chew on. Although it would have been nice for Coach Leach to be properly hydrated before the conversation. It seemed like he was having a little trouble with a dry throat of some sort there. Maybe a little Gatorade or two before he came out. Come on now. Man. Help Coach out.
You know, get a piece of bubble gum or something. You know, a piece of can. Do something, man. Have water ready to go.
He was struggling a little bit.
Man,
but
goodness.
We played some comments that caught your attention yesterday, D-Mace, from Lane Kiffin, and we had a great discussion about that. Mike Leach had a slightly different take on the same essential issue, correlating what has happened in college football in the last year to a pro setting. And the way he put it was, what if you went to an NFL player or general manager and said, okay, imagine that every one of your players could up and leave at any time for a better situation, and there's no salary cap. He said, well, that's essentially what we have now in college football. On some scale, any player on any team could be poached, and he could legally just walk across the street to another team for a higher amount of dollars. It reminds me a little bit of the early days of Charlie Finley, when Major League Baseball got free agency for the first time, and there was no system. They had to create a system that was the best for the game. And what Charlie Finley was saying, well, hey, let's go ahead and make the Wild Wild West. Let's let everybody be a free agent every year and see what happens. But that would create chaos. But that's what they have right now. That's what Mike Leach is saying is, what do we do? He said, we're the coaches. You hear Lane Kiffin saying, let's have a salary cap. You hear every coach sort of pleading for some sort of structure. Because as it is now, everybody on that Mississippi State team, everybody on the Vanderbilt team, everybody on Georgia's team, any school around the country, a player could be bid on, right? They could somehow go to you back channel and say, if you come over to my place, I'll guarantee you this. I mean, so what did you think of how he said that? He said, watch the expression on their face.
He's right. If you walk up to a player or GM or owner and ask them that question, their expression would basically write your article for you before they even get an opportunity to comment on it. He's right. I think he's right in line with the coaches we've heard. Is that this is not sustainable. It is not sustainable. No matter how, yes, great that these kids are, getting paid for their name, image, and likeness, but there's no structure. You just throw it out there with no structure. Eventually, this whole thing is going to crumble. This whole thing is going to get completely, it's going to go left. I've never seen a situation where you just say, all right, here you go. And then everything sort of works out on its own without any structure, no nothing written down. Just throw it out there. Say, here you go. Make it work. It's not going to work unless there's some type of structure. And that's what the NCAA.
That's our question.
Yeah. That's what they did.
What is the structure?
This is not sustainable.
What's a good season? And who proposes a good system? Because the NCAA doesn't seem to have any leadership ready to go. Like, I don't expect a press conference in the coming weeks from the NCAA saying, here is what we propose for the NIL. Like, who's going to even put a proposal together on what the system should be?
Because
with
no one, I think no one can put together a system that would be beneficial for everyone. because no one put in a system prior to even having the NIL. So you can't backtrack now.
Right. So could Greg Sankey do it? What if the SEC said, all right, here's what we want. We want an even, as even a playing field as we can in our league. Let's set our own rules for NIL. Is that smart, or do they just end up getting outbid by Big Ten schools or something like that?
This has to be a blanket thing. This can't be, well, the SEC is doing it this way, the Big Ten is doing it that way. Well, if I'm coming out of high school, I'm trying to figure out who has the best NIL requirements or rules that allows me to make the most money. Well, if the Big Ten's is better than the SEC, well, the SEC has all these regulations, I'm going to the Big Ten. That's just the way it is. That happens in business. Right. You know, when that happens when you're purchasing things. Who has the best? Where can I get the biggest bang for the buck? Where can I get the best service? You know, and feel happy and feel as if, you know, I'm paying for something that I feel I'm getting its worth for. Well, which one am I doing? Okay. If the Big Ten says we ain't got no regulations, you can make as much as you want, then I'm going to the Big Ten. I may want to be at the SEC, yes, but the Big Ten has no restrictions.
I have no limits somewhere else.
There's limitations.
He was talking a lot the other day about collaboration. He wants collaboration so we can put together something that's uniform. And that's why I think a lot of that talk rolls back into the theory that you will have a separate division for the schools that can really do NIL right, and so they will have their own league eventually, tied to the TV money, et cetera.
That's when I think they're going to really get a hold of the NIL. Once they establish what is what with these mega conferences, whether it's two or three, then they're going to put in place rules for NIL. Because I don't care about the other conferences. We have the best conferences right here, the mega conferences.
It's going in that direction, and it's going there fast. All right, and it's all tied together, too, this NIL, the transfer portal, all of this realignment, big issues in college sports. And how does it affect everything else? What's the domino effect? We've been talking about this for a while. More coming tomorrow on this. D-Mace will be back. Coming up next, more coverage from SEC Media Days. We're going to go right to Radio Row. Michelle Knezovic and Caroline Fenton right here on 102.5 The Game, 106.3, and The Game Nashville app.